CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
We'd like to thank our sponsors. Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. The SAP Business by Design solution is a single integrated business management solution that delivers the best of SAP software on demand, offering the benefits of larger applications without the need for a costly IT infrastructure. And Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And in this week's CFO Radio News, in fourth quarter of 2010, the Washington Post announced disappointing sales and profit forecasts from computer networking giant Cisco Systems show that cutbacks in government spending pose risks for companies that rely on the public sector for growth. Governments in Europe, Japan, and some U.S. states reduced orders as their budgets came under pressure, said Cisco Chief Executive John Chambers. State government orders fell 48% in the last quarter from the previous period, he said. We believe the public sector business will continue to be challenging for at least several quarters, said Chambers during a conference call to discuss the company's results. The challenges for Cisco, which gets about 22% of its business from the public sector, may signal broader risks for businesses that depend on government spending. Technology construction and healthcare firms draw revenue from state and local governments, which reduce their spending in the third quarter and cut into U.S. economic growth. The report caps a quarter of earnings among corporate technology companies that suggests the economy is struggling to recover quickly. Cutbacks at the state and local level are starting to weigh on companies doing business with those governments. The slowdown in municipal and state expenditures is putting a bigger burden on private industries and consumers to spend at a pace that maintains the economic recovery. Chambers said government demand varies by region. Spending in the U.S. federal government and public agencies in emerging markets remained buoyant, even as other entities held back. His quote was, "We're trying to get ahead in terms of our projections for government spending. We were surprised at how quickly that dropped off." And part of the reason for us having a government-focused newscast is because of our guest today. Johnny Keith joins us to discuss the role of the CFO and specifically that of internal audit. Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, Johnny, you are the Assistant General Manager of Internal Audit for the Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, known as MARTA, in Atlanta, Georgia. In this capacity, you're responsible for administering the overall audit activities for the Department of Internal Audit. Prior to taking the position as AGM of Internal Audit, you were the Audit Manager of the Operational Audit Section. You're a graduate of Clark College in Atlanta, Georgia, with a Bachelor of Arts degree in Economics and Business Administration. You are a certified internal auditor and a member of the Institute of Internal Auditors. And occasionally you teach courses for the National Office of the Institute of Internal Auditors. You're a member of the Association of Government Accountants and a Certified Fraud Examiners, Well, Johnny, that's a little bit about who and what you are today, your current role. You oversee the audit function for MARTA. Tell us a little bit about your background. Let's step back a year or two. What was your first position, and how did that bring you to where you are today?
Well, we probably have to step back a lot of years. When I first came out of college, my first job was an examiner for the Federal Reserve Bank in Atlanta, and I absolutely loved that job. I got a chance to travel. As I grew up here in Atlanta, I'm a native Atlantan. I grew up in Atlanta and never traveled a whole lot, but when I became a bank examiner, we examined banks in the southeast part of the United States, and I got a chance to see the sunrise from Fort Lauderdale on the east coast of Florida, and got to see the sunset in Tampa. It was just one of visited Bourbon Street in New Orleans, got to see the Grand Ole Opry House in Nashville, got to go to a lot of great places, worked with a lot of great people, and just had a wonderful time. But we also traveled to some places that were not quite as large. We traveled to some small cities. The one story I always tell is it was a city in Louisiana. I'm not going to name it, but we went there. It was a small city. They only had one hotel, and we went there in April, and they had a cold snap. So in the middle of the week, so I called down to the front desk, and I asked the secretary, the receptionist, can I get an extra blanket? And she told me she was sorry somebody was using it. So that was a pretty small seat. I did get dibs for the next night, though. So
so you were warm on night two, but you froze on night one.
Yes, but I had a wonderful time. Loved being a bank examiner. Worked for the Federal Reserve Bank 7 years. And I would still be there today, except for my daughter. My daughter was about 2 years old. I was at the airport, and she was crying, "Daddy, don't go." And I realized at that point that I really needed to change to find a job that didn't take me out of the city. I wanted to be part of raising my child. So I left the Federal Reserve Bank after about 7 years, and I started working for Southern Railway at the time. They merged with Norfolk Western, but it was Southern Railway at the time. And I worked there for about 10 years. I worked there as an operational auditor. And after they merged, after Southern Railway merged with Norfolk Southern, they were talking about moving the audit department up to Roanoke, because Roanoke was the operational center for Norfolk Western. And I decided, I'm a native Atlantan. My wife was born here. I didn't want to move, so I took a buyout. Then I started working for MARTA. And MARTA is the place that I really came to love auditing. That's when I really knew that that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I went on to get a certification as a certified internal auditor, and then my other certifications. But at MARTA, I started out as a contract auditor, and our responsibility at that time was to review contracts. We had a lot of government money, and one of the things we needed to do was make sure that the contracts that we engaged in, that the prices were reasonable, and that they were within the regulations. There's a federal acquisition regulations that we have to abide by, and we have to make sure that all our contracts abide by those regulations. So I worked in that capacity for about 10 years. Then I was promoted to operational manager and worked in that position for about 4 years. And then I was promoted up to the chief audit executive, or the assistant general manager for internal audit. And that's where I've been since then. Just had a marvelous time. Just really enjoy what I do.
And the wonderful aspect of me getting to know you, Johnny, has been the fact that I, too, have shared some of that passion of internal audit. And I will say up front that in the realm of all the different finance and finance-related functions, internal audit has had a bit of a bad rap over many, many years. And we're kind of thought of the stepchild, but it's actually a really fun, exciting task. And certainly in my career, my juncture in internal audit was very much thought of by the company I was with as being a stepping stone for management. It is a very good foundation for you at a relatively junior level to have access to senior management that perhaps you wouldn't ordinarily. And you see the company from different eyes.
That's exactly right. And I tell people that all the time. From an audit perspective, you get a much broader perspective, whereas most people, when they do their jobs, they know what they do, and they're very good at what they do, but they have no idea what they're doing, how it impacts others. But from an audit perspective, you see a process from beginning to end. You see how what this person does over here, how it impacts what another person does over here. And that's why it gives you such a great perspective. That's why a lot of companies use internal audit as a way to train managers, because you get that broad perspective. So I tell people all the time, I just love it. It also, for me, it gives me an opportunity to help people. Ever since I've gotten at MARTA, that has really kind of driven me. One of my personal philosophy is, as we go into different areas to audit, I always want to leave it better than I found it. So that's been kind of my thing over the past years in auditing.
The very strong philosophy, I think, for any field of business that you're in. Very much so. Well, we like to explore the element of passion, and we've talked a little bit about the passion of you and internal audit. Is there anything particular about internal audit that creates that passion within you?
For me, the biggest thing is being able to help people. And you mentioned a few minutes ago, audit has kind of had a bad rap. In some cases, it's deservedly so. Some auditors will go in and take a dictatorial style of doing things, and it really doesn't sit well with people. A lot of people, there's a saying that auditors will go in after the battle is done and bend it the wounded, you know. So a lot of people look at audit in a bad way, but we at MARTA, we've been able to change that because people understand that we go in, we're trying to help, and we're not trying to pick on anybody. We're not trying to show up any flaws or anything. Our whole effort is to try to help. And that's the thing I think that draws me more to auditing than anything else, because it puts you in a position to help practically everybody in the organization. So that's the kind of thing that drives me.
Well, let's take that one step further, Johnny. What primary functions of the internal audit team, what are the primary functions of the internal audit team? And perhaps also talk, as you speak to the role of the internal audit team, how does that hierarchical or structure relate to that of the CFO?
Okay. At MARTA, we report functionally to the board of directors through the audit committee, and we report administratively to the CEO. And I tell you why. An internal audit is kind of a different kind of creature. It's one of the few positions that's going to have dual reporting responsibilities, and there's a reason for that. The Institute of Internal Audit Standards, they recommend this type of reporting requirement because it helps in terms of our objectivity and our independence. Organizationally, we're independent because we can report to the board. The board approves our annual audit plan and what we do. And then on a day-to-day basis, since the board is not there, on a day-to-day basis, the CEO, we report to the CEO for administrative purposes. Now, what this allows us to do is reporting to the CEO gives me, it enhances my objectivity, because if I had to report to somebody in my line, it could impact my objectivity if I'm doing an audit and have an audit finding concerning my boss, and knowing my boss is responsible for my Christmas bonus or whatever, then that could have an impact on my objectivity. So the Institute of Internal Auditors recommend that you report all the way up to the CEO. And even with the CEO, I could report to the board. If there's some problems with the CEO, I report up higher than that. So the reporting structure that we have now gives us the leverage we need to report objectively, and gives us the independence we need that we can do our jobs effectively.
Well, in that regard, also for the listeners today, perhaps you can explain a little bit of some of additional dynamics that you perhaps play with in terms of your audience. You're the internal audit function, but then there's an external audit function. Talk a little bit about the differences between the two, and because of the fact that MARTA is that government organization, is there a different twist with it being government?
In a sense, there is, because one of the things, MARTA was created by the state of Georgia, and within the law, they call it the MARTA Act. Within the MARTA Act, we are required to employ an external auditor to do our financial statement. They have the responsibility to go in, look at our financial statement, and give an opinion as to whether or not our financial statement fairly reflects what the assets and liabilities are. That's their responsibility. They report through the audit committee. From the internal audit department, we administer the contract for the audit committee. So we'll work with the external auditors. We'll share our audit annual audit plan with them to make sure that we don't duplicate anything. and also to share any audits that we've done that may help them on any of the things they're looking at concerning the financial statement.
So there's transparency in terms of your work. They have full access to it.
Exactly. Exactly. So we kind of work with them to make sure that that we can be accessible to them and that they can do their jobs. But we really don't get involved with the financial statement. That's all kind of taken care of by them and required by the MARTA Act for them to do that.
So there is that regulation that helps with the structure.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the mechanics and the work, what you do in internal audit. How do you begin an internal audit? You've mentioned a couple of times that you have an annual plan. So from a strategic perspective, there are certain projects, certain audits that you have agreed with the board that you're going to perform. But how do you begin that audit? How do you initiate, for lack of what might be referred to as a project for the organization? And how do you bring in a risk assessment in that regard?
Well, what we do annually is we talk with management, we talk with board members, and we try to find out what we're trying to do is develop an audit universe. We're trying to determine what are the things out there that are auditable that we need to look at. So in talking with management, in talking with the board, and then talking among ourselves in the audit department, looking at our prior audits and getting an understanding of where we feel the risks are, we will try to get an audit universe of all the things that are out there that we could possibly look at. The next part of that is trying to rank them in terms of risk. Now, we look at things like how much money is involved, whether or not there is a security or safety issue involved, whether or not we've had some issues with past audits. There are a number of things that will go into doing a risk assessment and trying to get a number. And once we get a number on all the audits, on all the items in the audit universe, then we rank them. And we rank them from top to bottom.
And does the internal audit function and you and your personnel rank them, or does management rank them? How do you manage that process?
Well, actually, we rank them based on what we see after we've talked with management. Part of our ranking takes into consideration the information we've gotten from management, information we've gotten from the board. And we take all that into consideration in doing the ranking. And once we get the rank, we know based on our staff, we know the total number of audit hours we have in a year. And then we take those hours and we start to apply those hours based from the highest risk all the way down until we run out of audit resources. And when we get to that, that becomes our annual audit plan. This is what we plan to look at. Now, included in that, we also try to make time for board and senior management requests, because inevitably, during the course of the year, they'll ask us to look at something or do something two or three times. So we try to incorporate enough time for that. And we also include time. We have a fraud hotline, and we try to also include time to make sure that any calls coming in that involves a fraud or abuse, that we get a chance to look at it. We consider that very important, and we take that very seriously. So we try to include that time in there as well. Now, once we get that done, we take our audit plan to the board, to the audit committee, and they review it and they approve it, and that's where we start. One thing, though, that we try to make the board understand, it's not a static plan. Things change. Situations come up. So we may have to move some things up and down and add some things. As a matter of fact, the board has had us to add a couple of things to the risk assessment just in the past year or so. But this is our plan, and we may not stick directly to it because of circumstances, but we do have a plan.
Now, Johnny, some aspect of that I'd like to delve a little bit deeper, if we will, under the covers. When you learn internal audit and you're going through that in the university days, and then you're going through the IIA protocol and learning and training, it's very fact-based. It's very statistical-based. And the risk assessment that you learn is a very large part statistical calculations. But the reality is that is a basis for individuals and leadership such as yourself and the audit committee to make a judgment, which brings in a whole series of how do you teach that to the student? How do you yourself take the element of judgment? I myself in my career have a very strong, intimate relationship with my gut. And when my gut says, pretty much you need not to do it or you got to change another direction, what works for you in that judgment?
Well, and I tell people, you're going to make judgments. You're not going to get around making judgments. Judgments, you're going to have to decide one way or the other. The biggest thing about judgment is your experience and your understanding. And I tell when I teach the IA courses, I tell the only thing you'll get better the more you do it. It's an experience-based thing. The more you do it, the better you are. Every year, your judgments should get better, the more you do it. So it's not a matter that you have to make. You're going to make judgments. The issue is whether or not you're going to continue to grow, gain the experience to, I tell people all that you know is all that you've learned, but all that you've learned is not all that there is to know. You have to continue to grow. And as you grow and as you gain more experience, the better your judgment should be.
Is it a good idea in terms of internal audit for you to look at developing your career in slightly different aspects outside of internal audit? Certainly for yourself, you've been at different industries, you've been at different companies. I can perhaps show that may have brought a more rounded Johnny to the table as you had developed your plans and your focus for MARTA.
Well, on any job, if you're going to be an internal audit, one of the things that you're going to have to do is understand the business process that you're looking at. That's what makes auditors good candidates for managers and gaining the broader perspective. But you have to get a good understanding of what your business does, how it does it. So, that's the kind of thing I think that helps you in your growth and your understanding. Whatever field, whether it's transportation, whether it's something else, whatever it is, as an auditor, you have to have a good understanding of what the business is. What do you do? How do you do it? And that helps you in, because there is a framework for auditing that you bring also. And you having that understanding of the business and the framework of auditing makes you able to do your job really, really effectively.
Now, something that I learned that was perhaps not forefront of my understanding when we first met, Johnny, was that MARTA and the transportation industry is a little bit of a unique, for lack of a better term, business, in that you have buses, trains, and so forth that have physical space on the side, and you're a little bit of an advertising company, if you will. You have revenues from, if you will, selling that space to a company that might want to advertise. That's a little bit of a unique aspect, because I think of transportation firms as people carriers, product carriers of widgets and so forth in some industries, and clearly you're a people carrier.
You're exactly right. Our whole job is to carry people from point A to point B. The advertising came as a part of budget problems more than anything else. I guarantee you there were a number of board members who kind of swallowed before they voted for this, because it was all a result of pretty much a need for funds. But you're right. Our primary focus, if we could get around without doing it, we would. But our primary focus is taking people from point A to point B. That's what we do. That's our job.
And there's a significant safety aspect to that.
Yes. When you have buses and trains, you've got big things moving. There's a lot of possibility. There's a lot of risk of things happening. When you've got things moving, even escalators, elevators, when you got things moving, there's always the risk of something happening. So, yeah, there are security, there are safety issues that we have to look at. And we have, that's one of the things we put in our risk assessment. We have a safety department, and one of the things we try to do is make sure that the safety department is doing what it needs to do to make sure safety is one of the is at the forefront of what MARTA does.
Sure, absolutely. Well, how do you take all the things that you've talked about and determine which aspects to focus on for the business? Where do you start? Do you start with a clean piece of paper? Do you start with what came before?
Actually, it really goes back to the audit audit work plan, the annual work plan. And you're right, to a certain degree, we will start with a blank sheet of paper and we will start looking at what is it out there that we need to look at? What is it? What are the things out there that we need to focus in on to make sure every company has objectives? Every company has objectives. And every time you have an objective, there's always a risk that something will happen to keep that objective from being from happening. Management has the responsibility to set up management controls to ensure that that objective happens. What we do is go back and we try to look at the controls that management has set up. And number one, to make sure if the controls they've set up are adequate. That means if they work, are they achieving what they're supposed to achieve? And the second thing we do from an audit perspective is we see if they're effective. We determine if the controls are adequate, are they actually being used? So that's basically the way we do it. And we, from a broad perspective, from an audit perspective, there are so many things that you can look at. We have a broader goal from taking our broad goal is to take people from point A to point B. But in that broad goal, you've got to hire drivers that are qualified. You've got to have buses that work regularly. You've got to have trains that work regularly. You've got to have tracks that are working and doesn't have any problems with it. There are so many things that goes into that number one goal. There's so many sub goals that you have to look at. And every one of those sub goals, management has to come up with some kind of controls, management controls, to make sure that whatever the risks are, that those goals won't be achieved, that they come up with some kind of controls to ensure that those goals are achieved.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks from the top, and as you filter down, there are so many audit opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the challenge may be what to exclude for the year rather than what to include.
It always is. You can audit. If you had a staff of 500, you could still find so many things to audit. But when you have a staff of 15, you have to prioritize. And that's where the annual work plan comes into effect. And that's where the risk-based assessment comes into effect. So you can put your audit resources where you feel the highest risks are. And that's not to say that some of the stuff that you didn't audit, something may happen there, but based on your best judgment, your best understanding, you want to put your audit resources where you can get the most bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to change topic slightly if I can, Johnny. Having spent some time with you, I know that you have some very strong philosophies about leadership and management. During your time with MARTA, we talked a little bit about the audit function having that bad rap in some companies, and just generally speaking, employees don't like the auditors coming in. But you have been able to very successfully take an internal audit function, which is now called upon by the business unit heads. They actually pick up the phone and say, "Hey, Johnny, I'd like you and your people to come in and visit me." There are a lot of internal audit functions around the world that would dream of having that level of acceptance. How have you achieved that?
Well, it was a kind of a long process, and it started with my predecessor. But the group before them, MARTA, like a lot of auditors, audit departments, had a pretty bad reputation. And I have to admit, deservedly so in some cases.
And some of that was really the time and function of the expectations of an internal audit function.
Well, I think in our case, it was really a matter of the audit the audit leadership at that time and their perspective of what audit was. And theirs was kind of an adversarial type approach. You know, they had the stated objective that they would audit by terror. That made them audit terrorists. And they couldn't understand why when promotions came up, people, because audit is a good place, but when people, when promotions came up, nobody wanted anybody from audit because of the way their attitude toward the rest of the company. It was more of an adversarial kind of a thing. And we got out of that. And my predecessor started it. And what I think the biggest thing that changed it was we started to develop trust with our audit clients. When our audit clients started to understand and realize that we were not out to get them, we're not out to make a reputation, we're not out to kick them while they're down. Our sole purpose was to help them and the authority and MARTA. And once we were able to gain their confidence and gain their trust, things started to change.
So it's all about relationship building.
Well, let me tell you, it really is. And once people understand that you care and you're not out trying to make a reputation, they will call on you because inevitably they have problems and they've started to see audit as a way of helping them with their problems. And that's the thing we were shooting for. One of the other things I think that really changed a lot of people was our audit report. The tone of an audit report is really important. You can have a tone that's very negative, or you can have a tone that's very balanced and even. Once people see that, I think when we started doing our reports, they saw that it was balanced, it was even. We allowed them to make whatever comments they wanted to make. They understood based on our audit reports that we're not out to get them. So when they could see in writing that we're not harpooning them and lampooning them, it went a long ways toward establishing the trust and the relationship that we needed to kind of build this partnership of getting things done. One of the things, though, I do have to mention, and I mentioned it in all my classes, because you do want a partnership, but you have to be very careful, because one of the trademarks of an audit department is that it's objective. And if you get too close to anybody, it could impact your, you really may keep things straight, but it could impact people's perception of your objectivity with certain people. So it's good to have partners, but it's a fine line that you have to walk to make sure that when people look at your audit report, they know that it's subjective and it's fair and it's honest and it's balanced. So, but you still have to try to build the relationship, build the trust, so that when people do read your audit report, when they see it, they'll take it seriously and know that it means something.
And Johnny, you've touched a couple of times in that a wonderful description on a topic that we haven't specifically suggested that we would talk about, but I'd like to, and it's that of communication. When I learned internal audit and the risk-based assessment and all these statistics and various different things, nobody ever talked about how to communicate better. We did have an aspect of the learning that was about communication. We learned what should be in an audit report. We learned in terms of how you would communicate the risk-based assessment. But what you're describing is very much soft skills.
It is. And I think you're right. I don't think they teach that in school. My understanding is that in communication, only 7% of what you communicate is the message itself. Only 7%.
Does that mean you need to say it many, many more times?
Well, what it means is that the other 93% is based on your tone and your body language. So how you say something is almost 9 times as important as what you say. So that's what I try to tell people. I had to work on years my tone. I knew, I was not aware of it, but my tone was very sharp, and I had to consciously work on that. It's amazing. My wife and I, we do some things together at church and things. And my wife, she can say things and people just love her. I can say the exact same thing and thinking I'm saying it the same way. And they want to have me locked up for verbal abuse. I have no, but how you say things is just, it really, because in most cases, people are getting defensive and thinking about how they're going to respond more so than really listening to what you're saying. So to me, if I could give any advice to any auditors in terms of communication, it's tone and body language in terms of dealing with, talking with, communicating with your audit clients. I think it's crucial. So,
and you also said listening.
You have to, in order to give the audit client what they want, you have to listen and understand what it is they're asking you to do. So you're right. That becomes a huge, huge part too.
Well, what perhaps are the biggest challenges for an internal audit function? I certainly don't want to ask you to introspectively take that to Marta, but you certainly are involved with lots of companies through your work with the certified fraud examiners as well as the Institute of Internal Auditors. What's kind of, in terms of street talk, what are the big risks? Okay. What are the big concerns?
Oh, there are a lot of big things, but I'm going to tell you in terms of, for us right now, and I probably for a lot of people, particularly in this economy, the biggest thing for us is training, because the first thing people cut when they're cutting funds is training. And for us, it becomes crucial. We audit based on the government auditing standards, and they require that we have at least 40 hours of training every year. And at least 12 of those hours have to be government related. So in this age of, you know, the way technology is changing and the audit world is changing so fast, training is really essential. And now it costs anywhere from $35 to $75 per hour for learning. So, and then if you have to go, you know, out of town, you've got the added expenses of hotels, flights. So it's very expensive. So that becomes, for right now, for our department, that has become our biggest challenge is getting the training in. One of the things we did, I think we had the foresight to do, our external auditors, we put in their contract that they have to provide us 24 hours of training every year. So that becomes, so we kind of have that cushion for them. But I don't know how many other people would do that. But for us, it kind of helped us in getting our hours. But
and that keeps you fresh. It keeps you current. It keeps you aware of what other companies are doing and what their risks are. And you can bring that learning home.
Exactly. Exactly. And with things changing so fast, you really have to stay on top of your training. You really do. So that's kind of been our biggest struggle.
So let's take that training step one step further. You've got a very unique, I'll say, industry in terms of transportation and government funded transportation. Many of our listeners may not even have been in that sphere of government and so forth. Tell us a little bit about what is unique, specific to MARTA.
Well, public transportation as a whole, I think people look at it more as an expense, but public transportation really should be looked at more as an investment, because what happens is MARTA takes a bunch of cars off the road every day.
So there's an environmental aspect as well.
Oh, yeah. A lot of cars, and you know, it impacts the gridlock here. And Atlanta is getting to be a place, I don't know if you go up 400, but 400 is almost like a parking lot at 8 and 5 o'clock. So, but public transportation takes a lot of cars off the street and helps with the pollution. So I think the biggest thing is if I could promote anything, is that public transportation is really an investment in the quality of life for the people in the area.
Fabulous, fabulous. And in terms of taking that quality of life, we've talked about the safety aspects. We've talked about the risks as it relates to your internal audit function. I'd like to take that one step, maybe a little bit of a tangent, and talk about the data, the gathering of data. That is a very key role to any company. It's a very key role to the CFO, and certainly it is and will be to the internal audit function. Let's talk a little bit about information systems and data gathering. Are there any specific data information gathering processes that you use that bring just significant value?
Well, you're absolutely right, and particularly with most companies now, every company is becoming more technology dependent, and everything flows through a computer somehow or way. At MARTA, I think we're fortunate; we have some very good technology auditors that help us in terms of gathering information. One of the things we have to be careful about is we need to know who can get to information, who can get into these systems, and what can they do once they get into the system.
In terms of potential hackers from the outside?
And inside.
And inside,
yeah.
Okay.
So we want to look at, we're trying to make sure that from a technology standpoint that we can maintain the integrity of all the information that we have. And that's pretty much a full-time job. So as I said, we have a very good technology staff that helps us with that. And that's one of the things we try to focus on. We do, when we do our annual assessment, I may not have mentioned, but we do an assessment for both the operational side and we do an assessment for the technology side. So they're looking at the big picture, what's going on in terms of technology at MARTA. What is it that we should be looking at from an audit standpoint? So there's a lot of risk in that area, and we try to get into it as much as we can.
In a very collaborative way, by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's take the next leap. So you've planned the audit. You've now performed the audit. You've looked at the risks. You've done the work. You've, if you will, executed on the plan. Now we get to the sticky point of formal communication, i.e. the report. How do you provide your recommendations? Give us a little bit of background as to that and obviously conclusions that you may draw upon. And how do you provide the reporting in terms of the work that you have performed?
Okay. One of the most important things for us in any audit we do is the accuracy of the information. We have to have the information right. We can argue about what the information means, but if we say they had four widgets, then we need to be able to say there shouldn't be any question about the four widgets. When we get to a finding, though, we normally communicate our findings based on a recommendation by the Institute of Internal Auditors and by the Government Auditing Association. And what they do is it present findings with five elements. They look at the criteria. And by the criteria, they means what is the standard by which you're looking at this. Say, if there is a procedure that says that there should be monthly reconciliations of this account, that would be the criteria. The next thing we look at is the condition. Well, were there monthly reconciliations. So if we go in there and we find out, if we go in there and find out there were 12 reconciliations in that year, then we're fine. If we go in there and find out that there were eight, then we've got a problem, and that starts the finding. So the next thing is we look at, well, what's the impact? What's the effect? So we try to determine, well, if these counts are not reconciled, they could impact the accuracy of these accounts. So that's kind of the effect. And the other, probably, in my opinion, one of the most important parts of it is the cause. Because if you don't get to the cause, you have no basis for making a recommendation. I did an article in the IIA magazine a few years ago called Killing the Spider. And one of the things about that is if you went up in your attic and you wanted to clean it out and you saw the spider webs, you clean out the spider webs and you come back down. 6 months later, you go back. You got spider webs again. The reason is you didn't kill the spider. For us, from an audit perspective, if you go in and you don't figure out what the cause is, you may fix the problem. You may tell them, well, you missed four reconciliations. Do the four reconciliations. They'll do that. But you come back next year, it may be eight again or seven. Until you figure out what the cause is, until you can kill the spider, you really haven't fixed the problem. And that's where auditors really earn their money. Because when you fix the problem, you reached into the future and you set the situation up where the problem doesn't happen again. And that's where we really earn our money. So for me, the cause is probably the key component of what we do. So we go in and we figure out what the cause is, and then we make our recommendations. So our recommendations are going to be probably twofold in most cases. It's going to be fix the problem that we have. That means do the four reconciliations. And then it's going to be fix the reason that it didn't happen. Was it training? Was it lack of oversight? Whatever the problem is, that's the next point that we recommend. If it's training, we recommend the training. If it's oversight, we recommend that management focus on making sure that this get done. So whatever the cause, you've got to kill the spider. And that's that, to keep the cobwebs from coming. So that's one of the things we do. So that's basically how we present it. And keep in mind, here again, we have to make sure we try to also make sure that the tone is balanced and even. You really can. One of the things I found out, you can tell people almost anything if you tell them in the right way. And if you tell them in the right way, because the whole idea with this is to provoke people to do something about it, you tell them in the right way and they'll do it. They're more accepting to do it if you tell them in the right way.
And you've balanced the reasons why they should do it, and you've told them about the spider, so there is a root cause scenario for them. They have a full picture.
Yeah, that's another big part of it, because a lot of times when you get with management, you tell them a problem, and they'll say, so what? So the effects also becomes a key element, because until they see how it impacts them, normally if you can break it down into terms of dollars and show them that you can save this amount of money, or this amount of money may be impacted if you don't do this, that generally can provoke them a little more in terms of getting results.
So you are essentially an instigator of action correction.
Yes, yes.
Well, Johnny, I hate to say this. This has been a fabulous time spent with you, but we have come to the end of the show. But we've got one final question. We ask all of our guests on the show, what is your CFO tip of the month? Maybe for you, it's what is your internal audit tip of the month? What is yours?
And I'll tell you what it is. And mine is more of a life balance, you know, between life balance between work and between your family. I absolutely love auditing. I get up early and go. My wife thinks I have a girlfriend there, because I get up early and I'll go and I'll stay. I just love it. But I also understand the balance. And my personal philosophy is that there's no work success. There's no amount of success at work that can compensate for failure at home. So I understand my priorities. Although I love work, that was the reason I got out of the Federal Reserve Bank. I love doing it, but there's a balance, a family balance that you need to have to complete the whole process, in my opinion. So I'll just leave it at that.
That is not only a wonderful tip, but it tells a lot about you and your person and your core values. So thank you very much for sharing, Johnny. That's a great tip.
It's been my pleasure.
Well, thank you very much to Johnny Keith, our guest today, for sharing his innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO and the internal audit function. Thank you also goes to our contributor, The Washington Post. And thanks to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small to medium-sized companies. For more information on their products, go to www.sap.com/SME. And last but not least, Financial Executive International, the preeminent association for CFOs and financial executives. They can be found on the web at financialexecutives.org. This and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO or know of one who'd like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via that website. Thanks to listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.